Welcome to this episode of the Security Clearance Careers Podcast, Clearcast, your source for security clearance, intelligence community, espionage, national security, and defense contracting updates. In our exclusive interviews with intelligence community and government leaders.
Part two of our podcast with Jerry Auger, who is an adjunct professor in the Department of Cyber and Computer Sciences at the Citadel in Charleston, a content creator, and founder of SimplyCyber.io.
I just think particularly for like the small defense contractors, which is where I come from, small and mid-size, I really feel for those folks who are just like trying to be scrappy within this industry and, you know, work with some of the giants and, you know, kind of tackling some of that stuff may prove difficult if they don't have the teams in-house to kind of handle it.
They're definitely going to be, I mean, that's part of the reason like self-attestation was even introduced, because even if they agreed to everything, they wouldn't be able to afford the independent audits and stuff without, and like still consider to make margins and whatnot. It will be difficult. I did review CMMC 1 when it had come out and what controls you'd have to implement. And some of them are problematic for a small business. Like, for example, like an entire security operations capability. I mean, that's like, you can either outsource that to a firm for like 75 grand a year, 80 grand a year. You could do it in-house probably for more money. As a small business, you're probably using cloud systems only. You're probably not, you know, networked or integrated. Like everybody's working from home. So like, it's really unfortunately like killing a mosquito with a cannon, where like a fly swatter would be more than sufficient. So I do think when it launches, some of those smaller businesses that have leaner margins are going to be begging for some type of like relief or some type of alternative solution for CMMC compliance. And we'll see how that goes, but it is going to be tough. And unfortunately, Katie, I think what's going to end up happening is it's going to stifle innovation. Not to get too down that road, but like, you know, innovation comes from being able to be flexible and be thoughtful and have extra resources to be able to commit to like explore ideas. You know, dude, I'm all about investing in cybersecurity, but like, it's got to have a cyber risk reduction component to it. But you know, the way the federal government goes, they can't have special snowflakes everywhere. They have to have like, you know, like tiers. So, or else it's not manageable.
Yeah. So we're at what, CMMC 2.0. Okay. We'll see when we get to the 3, 4, 5.0.
If you're thinking about getting a tattoo, you might want to wait until right. You firm it up.
Man, you with the zingers. I just, yeah, no, great metaphors, great conversation. And so at this point, I'm actually going to be copycatting you. It's the biggest form of flattery. And I saw on one of your streams, you were running through some, you know, recent headlines and kind of giving your thoughts. And so I thought that we would discuss a couple of headlines today. I am not the technical person, so I want to hear yours, and I might not have as much to offer, but I'm focusing on the FBI with this one. So the FBI was warning about adversaries. So the first one came from Info Security Magazine. The FBI recently issued an alert on Russian threats targeting routers. So tell us kind of generally the importance of, you know, cyber hygiene from, you know, a user and a company standpoint, using a VPN, et cetera, kind of in relation to that recent headline.
Yeah. So when you see FBI advises, one of the first things you should do, if you're a non-technical person listening to this, typically the FBI will have like a non-nerd version for people to consume. So you can do something about it. But as far as attacking the router, one thing that you got to understand, again, getting back to like understanding networking, one thing you've got to understand is that basically there's only one internet. Okay. Like, and I know that sounds very simple minded and like obvious, but think about it for a second. Russia is attacking Ukraine. There are nation state threat actors everywhere. There's billions of dollars in financial fraud being committed across the internet. And then like you and I are buying yoga mats on Amazon. Like it's the same internet. There's one internet. We only got one, and it's an incredibly hostile place. Many of us get to live in like a bubble unbeknownst to like all of the realities going on. It's like walking down a street in a war zone, and you just like in your view, like it's rainbows and sunshine. And like in reality, there's like bullets flying around. That's the reality to kind of set the stage. So when you think about that, that means a threat actor in Cambodia can just as easily try to connect with you on Facebook or connect with you on Instagram or connect with you on Snapchat. The same as the person who you just met for coffee earlier today can connect with you, right? So because of that access, geographical distances, geographical boundaries make no difference now. A threat actor, in this case, as the FBI pointed out, they said Russia, but it could be anyone, is scanning the internet. Another thing to point out about the internet, the IP address ranges, you know, like, oh, hey, here's my IP 10.7.13.22, whatever. Like, there is a finite set. Okay. It goes from 0.0.0.0 to 255, 255, 255, which means it'll take you a while, but you can count 0.0.0.1, 0.0.0.2 all the way up into 255 across and then start over. And that's what threat actors do. They, and good guys too. It's like how Google works. Google scans the internet using that same technique. Because it's a finite set, they just scan, start over, scan, start over. So when this router that the FBI is advising about, your internet facing, the internet bringing in to your house, the internet bringing to your phone that you're listening to this pod on right now, it's coming from somewhere. And it's usually, you know, someone's home network or a Starbucks router or something like that. But at some point, it has to interface with the internet, this hostile world, and it's got an IP address because they need to know where to deliver the mail. They need to know what the address is of the house you're at. So because of that, threat actors can find it. They can determine what kind of brand it's running, what version it's running. They can know if it's vulnerable or if they've found some technical exploitation that's never been released. They can pop it. They could take it over. And now they have your router. And now they can use it as a pivot point, frankly, and start scanning your internal home network. That's, you know, more advanced, but that's what's going up. So when you see things like this, and I'm using your home network, you're like, oh, they're going to know about my Xbox. No, okay, so let's pivot it back to your small, scrappy startup business that's like barely doing CMMC. And like, in all reality, you're not. Even though you don't have a corporate network, even though you don't have some file server, everyone in the office is coming out of some router. And if that router gets popped, by the way, all your traffic is going through that router. So if they set a sniffer there and they're just soaking up packets like a vacuum, they're going to get all that too, right? So you'd mentioned different things like VPN. This is the last thing I'll say, and then I'll go off on that. With something like this, there's different types of impacts that can happen, right? So if Russia takes over my home router, okay, or Starbucks router or whatever, that sucks and they could stop service. So now I get a denial of service, no availability. I can't play Xbox anymore. I can't check my email. They can sniff traffic and try to steal that traffic. They can reroute it. They could put up fake landing pages. So maybe you do want to use a VPN, right? So a VPN will allow you to establish a dedicated, encrypted, secure channel before you go out to the internet, right? And that will be from your point to the VPN concentrator's point. So as it passes through your router, it'll be all secured and encrypted. Now, that doesn't stop you from a denial of service attack. Obviously, that doesn't stop you from it soaking up your packets, but they'll be encrypted and, you know, you'll be right there. So yeah, those are just my initial thoughts of this FBI router story. You really gotta, it's not just as simple as like, oh, like, okay, like I'm fine. No, like it might not be the tech stack you're running in your house today, but could be tomorrow, you know? So at a minimum, patch your stuff.
Yeah, FBI is just continuing the warnings. Let's move on to FBI director warns China computer attacks are now at a scale greater than we've seen before. So we actually recently attended an event with Christopher Wray, but he gave the warning as intelligence chiefs and politicians met at the Munich annual security conference recently. So any thoughts on this, you know, as we're, you know, kind of moving on to adversaries, the name doesn't matter, but any thoughts on that one?
Yeah. I mean, well, this particular one is much more nation security simply because the example we just spoke about was like you protecting your business, you protecting your family. You have a personal vested interest in protecting your home, right? In this other instance, basically imagine all of these devices strewn about, you know, small businesses that are doing retail shops, personal homes, et cetera, whatever, vacation Airbnbs, whatever. What they're saying in this particular story is that those assets, which again, can be enumerated across the internet through a scan, are being popped and taken over. And basically the threat actors in this instance are just laying dormant, essentially setting up an entire network of systems that they could activate in a moment's notice. The closest thing I could think of is imagine tens of thousands of sleeper cells that could be activated at one instance if the nation state that controls those sleeper cells decided it's time to go hot and go live. And then, you know, obviously, you know, the call is coming from inside the house at that point, and you're like, you know, what am I going to do? So it is a bit scary. And with that dilution of responsibility, right? Oh, my house, my router, my network, my family, I want to fix it. With this other one, this dilution, you're like, well, it's, you know, Jerry's knit shop down on Main Street. Like, yeah, I probably could pay someone to fix it or whatever, but like, I'm too small. No one's going to steal it. No one's going to break in. Is it really my responsibility? Like, doesn't Comcast or AT&T is supposed to be responsible for that. It's not my problem. So that it becomes this like diffusion of responsibility, which, you know, further increases into that. So yeah, unfortunately, Chris Ray is right.
That's a great point that could be applied to a number of things. I just had a thought. Remember that silly balloon? I mean, not so silly, but man, what a journey we've been on even since then. And so this last one, you know, talking about a different sector, but as we know, you know, critical infrastructure is something that should be in everyone's interest. So the FBI warns that healthcare sector is a target of ransomware attacks. And so why is the healthcare industry another major target? And then for those who aren't listening, I don't know what rock you've been living under, but explain what ransomware attacks are.
Oh, sure. So ransomware is the number one threat targeting basically businesses and governments, especially in the United States, but really everyone's a victim. And it's essentially a for-profit crime where a threat actor breaks into your environment. They steal all your data, first of all, so they have a copy of it now. And then two, they use encryption to lock all your data. So imagine I break into your house, Katie, and I take all your personal files and photos, and I stick them in a safe, and I lock the safe, and I leave the safe in your living room with a note that says, "Hi, I'm Jerry. I did this, and I have the keys. I'll sell you the key. I'll mail it back to your house for $200,000. On average, it's like 3-7% of your annual revenues for those listening who want to get an idea of what the ransom is. But basically, they're extorting you to give you access back to your files. You might say, oh, I've got backups. I'll just rebuild. That's fine. Most times they delete the backups before you get them, before they encrypt them. It's possible you don't get the keys. Some agencies aren't allowed to pay because it's literally funding terrorism, so it's illegal. And then in other instances, say you don't pay. I'm just going to rebuild. They have a copy of your data. So they'll sell it. They'll shame you. They'll go through it. They'll expose your information if you've done something wrong, like emails and stuff like that. So that's what ransomware is. And it's incredibly lucrative. I jokingly say, like, if I didn't have a moral compass, Katie, like, I would be all up in ransomware's business. I mean, like, there's an entire, literally, like, entire affiliate models where you don't even have to understand what's going on. They just give you the playbook and you know, use your access and just detonate it in your own business. And I mean, obviously, if you're the business owner, you won't do that. But like, anyway, so that's ransomware. And you had asked me, I'm sorry, what was the original question?
Just talking about, I mean, obviously, our listeners are going to be interested in national security or work in national security. But I mean, critical infrastructure, everything is connected. Our society to function as a whole, healthcare is a major target. So help explain that.
There actually was kind of an unwritten rule. Like, even though they're criminals and threat actors and they hide in dark alleys, there is like a public element to it that like the good guys, us, interface with. So like we do know some of their motivations and we see what they're saying. And for a while, for years, literally healthcare was considered taboo. Like you were not supposed to attack healthcare. And then after the law enforcement, international Europol and stuff started really cracking down and kicking in doors and stuff, they basically said like, fine, you guys want to play rough, like let's take the gloves off. Healthcare is in scope. So they started hitting healthcare. The problem with healthcare, a lot of times hospitals, they will have downtime procedures, meaning like then the systems are down, they can still like take your temperature and do whatever. The actual real impact that everyone should know, and there is some parallels here for general business owners, the real impact is that the U.S. healthcare system, there's two parts to it. One, the U.S. healthcare system, if you guys haven't been paying attention, this isn't 1950s where you have a doctor who lives on Main Street and has a little bag and they walk to your house. Healthcare has turned into a major, major enterprise business, and businesses are acquiring other businesses, and like it's like a race to the top for absorption. So just to play it forward, in a few years it's going to be just like the telephone companies. There's going to be like four major healthcare providers in the United States, and even though you're going to your doctor here and you're going to your doctor in a different part of the country, like it's all part of the same healthcare system. Why does that matter? Well, because it's a system and it's a for-profit business, they want to leverage economies of scale. So they will be using one tech stack for all of their businesses. So if a third-party tech stack gets hit with ransomware, well, guess what? The entire hospital system is down, which is severely impactful. On top of that, again, a dirty little secret about the U.S. healthcare system, there's a reason we're all required to have insurance, right? It seems like it's a righteous thing to make sure that even, you know, people with basic income and stuff can get healthcare. But in reality, the whole economics of it is to charge the insurance company. So every touch, everything that happens to you in a healthcare experience gets documented and billed to insurance. And then that money comes back and, you know, that's how healthcare makes revenue. When those systems go down, they are not able to bill. They're not able to collect revenue. They're not able to charge the insurance companies. It has a massive impact. It's like a manufacturing line getting broken. And I want to point out, it's not like hospitals are running these like deep, deep cash flow reserves in order for this to happen. They're operating on cash flow margins. So doctors who are notoriously paid really well, if I work at a hospital as a brain surgeon, yeah, my mission is righteous and I'm helping people, or I'm an oncologist and I'm stopping cancer. If my paycheck stops coming, bro, like I'm going to go work somewhere else. With all due respect, I totally get it. I'm sorry, but that's the impact. So it's a staggering impact of like, we can't bill for you touching this patient. So it means the insurance isn't going to give us money for that, which means we can't pay you. How long can you go without a paycheck? And not just one doctor, but literally the entire healthcare system, right? Which again, it's so big that if it falls, it's dramatic. And the threat actors know this. And because they have the keys, they'll sell you. There's no reason for you not to buy it. If it's like when the government was like bailing out banks, oh, they're too big to fail. The same thing's happening here. The threat actors are like, oh, well, I mean, if we shut the lights off on this healthcare and it kills 300 people, they can't possibly allow that to happen. So here's some easy money. Let's score. And by the way, most threat actors who do ransomware are not Americans. Americans are seen as like juicy fat targets because we have lots of money, we're lazy, and we're American. And, you know, this is the perspective of, you know, threat actors. But my point is, that is why, in conclusion, Katie, that is why healthcare is at serious risk and why we've seen it just recently. Change Healthcare got hit. And part of that impact was that their pharmaceutical system, which tons of hospitals relied upon, was not accessible. So if you had some life-threatening disease, you had lupus, you had diabetes, you had whatever, you could not go get your prescription filled because the system couldn't tell them that, yes, Katie has this prescription and Jerry does not. So you can't have like basically pharmaceutical fraud, or else you'd have everybody walking up being like, hi, I'm here for my OxyContin, trust me, you know? So yeah, it's a hot mess.
Hopefully, instead of feeling scared from that last one, you feel motivated. And this is why, you know, cybersecurity talent is just so critically important. Jerry, Dr. Gerald Auger, thank you so much for joining me today. Most important, thanks to everyone who listened to this episode. And so I wanted to end on the importance of sharing content. I'd love, you put out a lot of content, so I'd love for you to tease to that here and offer you any space if you had closing thoughts for our listeners.
Yeah, hopefully you guys aren't scared, but you are inspired and excited. There is a lot of opportunity for cyber work, believe me, but it's not an easy journey, okay? And if you are a business owner and you don't know how to get help with cyber, like there's a lot of free resources out there for small businesses. Go look at CISA.gov, like CISA.gov. They have resources for small businesses. Even if you just do a little bit to like elevate the bar, then you're in a better position than you were. And I would say like at an absolute minimum, put multi-factor authentication on all your accounts, all of them. I can't emphasize this enough, okay? Especially your email, because guess what? If I break into your email, I can go reset your passwords to everything else because, surprise, they send an email to you to confirm that you wanted to reset your password. So that's not going to stop you. You need multi-factor authentication all over the place. And also, not to scare you, this is super specific, but if you're taking photos of your password backups, right? Like your little, everybody does this. You take a photo of like your emergency passwords because it's like 15 words. Guess what? Those photos are saved up in your iCloud. And when threat actors break into that, they literally sort by pictures and scan because it takes like 10 seconds to scan all your pics. Pic of you doing a selfie, not interesting. A pic of a random notebook page, totally interesting. Okay. So those are final thoughts on that. I will say that at Simply Cyber, if you like my style, or you like what I'm saying, or you just want to get some cyber intel, every single morning at weekday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern time for 1 hour, I've done it for 578 days in a row, I go live with about 500-600 other professionals in cybersecurity. And I break down the top cybersecurity news stories, just like the FBI story I did, and give actionable intel how you can use it. So it's basically like this, what we just did on this show, except every day. And I love cybersecurity, so it never gets boring for me to like flip out and just share guidance.
I'm inspired. I love your energy. So everyone go subscribe to Simply Cyber. And for more information on Cleared Careers and how to get into cybersecurity, you can visit news.clearancejobs.com.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of ClearedCast. Hit the subscribe button and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. For more security clearance updates and national security career advice, subscribe to news.clearancejobs.com. If you have an active clearance, refresh your profile and search Cleared Careers at clearancejobs.com.